Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Revolution Radio. Happy Independence Day. As some would say, Happy Dependence Day. But of course, we can celebrate the gifts that was given to us by our founders. And, you know, many of you who have read my blog know that I didn't put up anything today because if I was going to, it would be about repentance. Shouldn't we be repenting for kind of throwing away that gift, which finds us in a situation exactly as they predicted today? And so, anyway, so I still think it's Independence Day, but I do think that we have to think about our role in bringing this about. And I do have a post in the workings on repentance. I mean, there are a lot of ways that we can do this. I mean, obviously I'm speaking in the biblical sense, but as well, think of all the ways in your own life that, and even the lives of your parents, where we ignored the signs that were there and we let this kind of stuff happen. Like prayer going out of the school, the Bible going out of the school, formation of Department of Education. We got lulled by the security piece, and we gave up our freedom, and now as a result, we don't deserve either, it seems. But in honor of our country, I would like to thank all of our veterans and all of those currently serving right now. You do a great service to us. I just wish our politicians wouldn't use you as they do, and that you would be here in protecting us this evening. And always. This evening, seeing as probably everyone is off on their favorite shows, and mine has been in and out, and I am in the place where I am, I'm going to do a piece on constitutional governance, basically natural resource management and the Constitution. And I do this because not only am I writing a paper on this right now, but I think it's fundamental to our understanding of Agenda 21, the things that are assaulting us with our land, about our land and natural resources. But I also think it's very important to understand this term of sovereignty, both at the state level and individual, and independence. As I used to say in my work, really, if you want to demonstrate your sovereignty, go out and drill a well. And the management of our natural resources, people have taken that for granted in a lot of ways. And it's become perverted in the sense of this watermelon you know, green on the outside and red on the inside, a sort of environmentalism that actually removes people from the land and sets land aside for species other than ourselves. And guilt trips you into doing that. Well, now I guess we can get taxed on everything. But so I'm going to be talking about where we find our authority to manage natural resources in the Constitution. And surprisingly, you'll find out there is no federal authority really to do so. It is really the perversion of the Constitution. And that brings me back to my initial statement on responsibility when we started this show and repentance. It was our responsibility to make sure that the General Welfare Clause and the Commerce Clause were not misused to the extent that they are, and the taxation and so forth. And to be electing people who would do something about that. And it's just crazy. Let me go sideways just for a second. The fundamental easy way to stop this mess of Obamacare and the threats of Homeland Security and everything that is going on is to realize Obama is not eligible for the office. Get him out. All of his stuff is null and void. Yes, we know it, but, you know, everybody plays along with it, and that the Republicans know it as well, but that they play along with him being ineligible, it just shows them a part of the problem. This is very stark, very serious. We were invaded. We were taken over by a foreign usurper. Everybody knows that. Everybody's scared. But look at the power they have in their hands. So, and we let this happen. A bunch of mindless people, well, 60 million mindless people, voted for this guy. He's got the machinations in there, so nothing short of like an 80% turnout is going to defeat any of the planned vote fraud that there's going to be to show that he, in fact, the Mickey Mouse candidate, will win again. So eligibility is an issue on this day, as we are not independent as long as we have, you know, on one way we are on our own because we really don't have a president, so therefore we really don't have a government. On the other hand, we're dependent on this despot right now and our civility and our goodwill to try to muddle on through to an election that we don't know will happen or not. I tend to think an election will happen myself. But, you know, I'm not in the business of making any predictions. So, anyway, Bob, nice that you're here. Yeah, good. I will take a look at that. We are no longer independent. Excellent. Thank you. Well, I was going to say this will probably be a boring show for most people. I will take call-ins if anyone wants to. But feel free to, you know, catch this on the archive because it might be pretty good. And just before I get into my talk on natural resource management and the Constitution as a prelude to some other things, I would like to start with a commercial, but for my favorite group, the Article 2 PAC. Here we go. Be right back.
Barack Obama has usurped the presidency, and in so doing is now on the fast track to destroy America. Despite Obama's anti-American policies and disdain for the rule of law, there's a more basic and fundamental issue that needs to be addressed. It is the fact that Barack Obama was never constitutionally qualified to be president of the United States because he is not a natural-born citizen as mandated under Article 2, Section 1 of the Constitution. Simply put, Obama was not born to American citizen parents. That's parents, plural. He is an unlawful president. Answering the call to defend the Constitution, fellow Americans across the country have joined forces and proudly announced Article 2 Super PAC. Article 2 Super PAC's overall goal is to ensure that citizens and elected officials clearly understand Article 2 and the definitive meaning of natural-born citizen as intended by our founding fathers, thereby working to create a legally binding vetting apparatus which will ensure that all future presidential and vice presidential candidates are constitutionally eligible. We at Art 2 Super PAC are raising the needed resources to develop materials to promote our message across the country, assisting with key state ballot challenges, assembling our legal team of constitutional and elections law experts, and so much more. Please do your part to help save America for future generations and help support Art 2 Super PAC. You may donate online at www.art2superpac.com. That's ART2SuperPac.com. Or you may mail a donation to P.O. Box 940661, Simi Valley, California, 93094. We must work together to get our country back on course. We must throw off this ever-tightening noose of tyranny. We must preserve the founding principles upon which this great country was founded. Paid for by Article 2 Super PAC, not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee.
That was a great commercial, and we expect to hear from Article 2 Super PAC pretty soon. definitely promote the work that they're doing. And like I say, we're living in a land of a usurped office of the presidency. Okay, so tonight I'm going to do some notes on the Constitution and resource management and what I've found so far. Now, many of you know, many of you don't know, I am a natural resource management manager by profession, and water is my favorite thing to do, work on, think about, write about, and dream about. I'm trying to understand both how Agenda 21 is a fundamental assault on our Constitution and also try to figure out ways to combat it, because you know that, power abhors a vacuum. So if we do a good job of, for example, kicking out the Agenda 21 influence in our environmental departments and in various organizations and things like that, what happens in the meantime to some of the real work that some of the real environmental people were doing, like water quality and so forth and so on? And these are just very vital considerations, and I don't want to ever be in a position where someone can say, hey, you don't have any ability to take care of this yourself, so we're here to do it, and this is what we have to, and, you know, you should not care that this is Agenda 21 or it's the UN. Just be grateful we're going to do it for you, for your own good. Remember, tyranny for your own good is the worst kind of tyranny, and this is what is happening. And just for all of those listening out there, Obamacare is a tax, ha ha, we told you. But anyway, you know what I'm saying? We'll get into that discussion, but Obama is still ineligible. So, okay, from you take a look at the Constitution, there are elements of what I would consider natural resource management in the preamble, in Article 1, Section 8, in Article 4, in the Bill of Rights. And I would have to say, at the outset, there are three words that basically need definition and context, because these three words in the Constitution have been twisted so out of context, despite their meaning, to end up justifying increased government control over all of our natural resources. You can see where, for example, when you look at these treaties that grant, you know, non-governmental organizations authority over our land resources, where they can get this and slip in under the Constitution. These three words that need definition are, number one, regulate, number two, commerce, and number three, welfare. Now, if you look up definitions of that in 1878, something like that, you will see that regulate, for example, meant to make regular, It didn't mean to pass thousands and millions of regulations. It meant to make regular. And the Commerce Clause, of course, is what was misused in Obamacare. They tried to say under the Commerce Clause, which gives Congress the authority to lay and collect taxes, duties, imposts, and excises, to pay the debts, and provide the common defense and general welfare of the United States. But the Commerce Clause, sorry, I read a different clause. The Commerce Clause gave the authority to Congress to regulate commerce with foreign nations and among the several states and with the Indian tribes. Regulate commerce to make regular the commerce among the several states, meaning between the states, not within the states. And with Indian tribes, the Commerce Clause gave Congress the right to regulate trade with the Indian tribes, not destroy it, which is what they did, and then regulate commerce with foreign nations. So you can see when you look at just those three aspects of the Commerce Clause and the word regulate, how that has gone kind of out of control. So, okay, so commerce, and then finally, I think I said welfare. Welfare, of course, is found in the preamble, promote the general welfare of the nation. And in it's also found in Article 1, Section 8, which is what I read, to promote the general defense and general welfare. These three clauses have been used to justify more legislation than you can imagine. And in particular, in the natural resources area, this is where the avenue has come in. I should step back and say that I found nothing explicit in the Constitution that said the federal government can regulate natural resources, use, extraction, products, development in the Constitution, with the exception of these other clauses, and in particular the Commerce Clause, would be allowed to regulate energy prices across state lines, for example, but shouldn't be allowed to regulate energy development within each state. Same with environmental regulations as well. So it's always this indirect way, and then it relies on words and definitions and context, and now we find that we have elected, at least for the last three decades or more, individuals who have not paid attention, who've done everything they possibly can to abuse these three words, that we now have the EPA regulating your garden hose. Remember when you used to drink out of that thing? Boy, right now you'd get slapped for a fine for doing it, and then your parents would get reported, and, you know, then your dog would get picked up and everything. You know, it's kind of ridiculous, but who does that make word for? There have just been a lot of interesting things in my career that let me know that this thread on natural resources is extremely important to understand with respect to the Constitution. And if you look at the wealth of the United States as generated from the sale of quote-unquote public lands, the resources off of Indian lands, and so forth, generating the kind of wealth that was developed that we had in 1913 before the Fed, you know, a $5 billion surplus and 100% employment and one of the most productive countries in the world and certainly ever, and productive middle class and so forth. The wealth that was being generated off of resources, if you take one particular case of that wealth and say the condition of Indian lands, which we are bound by treaty to work on help protecting and so forth, you would see, and compared the money going into Indian communities for actual natural resource management or resources, you would see on the backs of at least one person, and certainly the natural resources and the tribes, the growth of the federal bureaucracy in natural resource management, the Forest Service, the Soil Conservation Service, the Land Office, which later becomes the BLM, the General Land Office becomes the BLM, Interior, Parks, Agriculture, just explosive natural resources, energy in the 70s with Carter, and, you know, why? This explosion was to control, I think, the commerce, if you will, among states developing their resources. But what it ended up was the federal government controlling commerce and development of natural resources on the landscape itself. So from the preamble, to promote the general welfare, you know that. Here's the 1878 definition of welfare. Here's the first definition. Exemption from misfortune, sickness, calamity, or evil, the enjoyment of health and common blessings of life, prosperity, happiness, applied to persons. Now, applied to states, exemption, welfare is exemption from any unusual evil or calamity, the enjoyment of peace and prosperity, or the ordinary blessings of society and civil government applied to the states. So is exemption from unusual evil or calamity, or exemption from misfortune? Where did it become a handout? What, work is a misfortune? Being out of work is a misfortune. But staying out of work and just taking a handout, what does that do? It just reinforces being out of work, if you will. So the later definition of welfare began to mean, in 1941, social concern for the well-being of children and the unemployed, as opposed to general exemptions. In 1904, and welfare state is recorded from 1941 on. So welfare right now means health, happiness, prosperity, and well-being in general. Welfare also means a financial and other assistance given to people in need. Welfare services, also called welfare work plans, or work to better the social or economic conditions of various underprivileged groups. The welfare public agencies provided with such gifts as assistance, chiefly welfare in receipt of financial aid from a governmental agency. Contrast that with exemption from misfortune, sickness, calamity, or evil. The general welfare clause was not a material thing about money. It was in part related to, I believe it's Article 4, Section 4, which is the promise of a republican form of government, that we would be exempted and relieved, that part of the public welfare was to protect our right to have a republican form of government and to not be taken over by socialists or communists or different kinds, or Sharia law and so forth. Welfare in 1878 would mean certain major engineering works, like in the floods of the 1930s come to mind, in New Orleans, and the displacement of large numbers of people in the levee systems and so forth and so on that developed after that. That would come to mind for the general welfare, but those projects for general welfare became things that we all paid back multiple times and that now generate money for this government that now uses these same facilities that were constructed in times of calamity to, you know, determine whether we get to turn the lights on or not in our homes. So welfare from the standpoint of welfare, the Congress has interpreted the National Environmental Policy Act, look for that language, in order to promote the general welfare of the population, it was felt the necessity to protect species of all kinds, animals and so forth. Look at how that has morphed now into not giving birthers standing, but wanting to give trees and animals standing in court because they can't speak for themselves. We who can speak for ourselves don't have standing. Okay. Another, so we've got from the preamble and Article 1, Section 8, we have welfare. Here is another area in which I can see a natural resource cause or program emerging in Congress's mind to promote the progress of science and useful arts, which at first really meant patents and the formation of the patent office, and to be able to offer some rewards and stuff for inventors and things like that. Congress was awarded exclusive jurisdiction over lands in D.C. and like authority over the rest of the nation, but lands purchased for erection of forts, magazines, arsenals, dockyards, and other needful buildings. Now, I believe in the partitioning of the West that one section and township was reserved. I guess things were all given out. The rest of the lands were kept by the federal agencies as public lands. But there was also a certain amount of land designated as federal land. And then there were the, under the Antiquities Acts and other things like that, setting aside special use areas, parks, and so forth and so on. So exclusive legislation over those lands, although beyond forts, magazines, the dockyards, and other needful buildings, these kinds of things are authorized under the Constitution, but it does not extend to everything. Then to make laws and powers necessary to carry out any department's or to fund any department or officer thereof. So any powers they vest in any agencies to do that, to make the laws, to implement the policies. So this is where, you know, they keep adding on what things mean in terms of general welfare and in terms of public benefit and so forth. So, let me check in the chat and see if you are all asleep, as I expect you might be. Right. There's some more things here, and yeah, I hope everyone's asleep. Me too, it shows that I am too. Well, I hope I don't sound it, but anyway, hope you're enjoying the show if you're listening now or later. Okay. So we've just finished a discussion on the Constitution of Resource Management, looking at pieces of the of three words that are found in various portions of the Constitution. one is welfare, one is commerce, and one is regulate. And noting that each of these words had different meanings back then than they do now, and the misinterpretation, or I would call misuse, of commerce, welfare, and now also taxation clauses and so forth, have misused by Congress, have allowed them to, you know, get the federal camel's nose under the tent and to essentially come right down into our properties and lands and, you know, backyards, essentially telling us how to regulate and live our lives. So you can see that by not paying attention to how that has been misused. We accept public benefits like the Missouri River Project or the Mississippi or any kind of flooding protection or other big federal projects, dams, and so forth. But in doing so, and not sort of regulating that ourselves and watching it, we've allowed the federal government as well to exercise increasing control in aspects of our lives for which they are not authorized. One of those is water, water supply, water quality, and so forth. So there we go. We're going to continue on to look at the Constitution. We've looked at the preamble, Article 1, Section 8, called the Commerce Clause, but various other clauses in there seem to have been used to expand the notion of Congress, of the government's role in your state's natural resource management. Article 4. Okay, Congress can dispose of or make rules and regulations respecting the territory or other property of the United States. Nothing in the Constitution prejudices any U.S. or state claim. So Section 3 of Article 4 says that they can make rules and regulations respecting their own property, respecting territory or other property of the United States. Not of states. Nothing in the Constitution prejudices any U.S. or state claim. In other words, nothing says that the states can't say, you can't come in here and ask us and regulate. Section 4, U.S. guarantees a republican form of government and shall protect each of the states against invasion, application of the legislature, or executive against domestic violence. So I believe it was Sandra Day O'Connor wrote a majority opinion in a case called that it made to the Supreme Court called New York v. United States, in which the United States tried to basically get the state of New York to implement some solid waste regulations, and New York said no. And Sandra Day O'Connor wrote for the majority opinion and cited Article 4, Section 4, as guaranteeing the republican form of government and shall protect each of the states against invasion. So the federal government was viewed as invading the state and ordering it to implement its own solid waste regulations. Now, solid waste, it's a natural resource. It's the product of all of our consumption of natural resources and so forth. So it's a natural resource issue. So in this situation, I would think that the states might have a case under Article 4 to prevent the government from stopping any exploration or development of energy resources within any state. Now, this does not mean that we can't protect the environment as we develop places. If places are going to be developed where there is an either-or, whether it's, you know, you say goodbye to the rest of the resources forever and mine, or you keep those resources and you don't mine or develop, that's a choice that needs to be made by the people there, not by any bureaucrat. But it needs to be laid out there so that people know what is going on and not be told a mistruth. You know, we're grown-ups. We can handle this. We know that resources need to be developed, and our own especially. So it looks like under Article 4, the federal government is prohibited from interfering. Now, if they were helping the United States develop its resource, they might have, you know, they might have a constitutional reason to come in and be there, but not the way our founders set up the Constitution, to allow the free market to do this kind of thing, to let the states develop their natural resources. So far it's Constitution 15, Constitution of Natural Resources 15 versus federal government controlling all natural resources in the U.S. 0. Except in certain cases. So it's more favorable for the Constitution. Now, under the Bill of Rights, of course, there we go with the 10th Amendment, the enumeration of the rights in the Constitution. With the 9th Amendment, enumeration of the rights in the Constitution shall not deny or disparage other rights retained by the people. So we have a right to develop our natural resources. And it was not enumerated in the Constitution that the Congress could do it or the federal government could do it. We've always had that right in our states to develop the natural resources. So Amendment 9 says, you know, we haven't given up, and these rights still exist. Amendment 10 makes it stronger. The powers not delegated to the United States by Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively or the people. So, essentially, Amendment 10 again says the power is not delegated to the U.S. Now, power is not delegated to the U.S. among the 18 delegated powers. None of them said natural resources, unless you stretch the word commerce or welfare or regulate. But none of them said natural resource development, control, water management, water control, water quality control. None of them said that. That's in the Constitution. So under Amendment 10, there is no, you know, there's nothing in the Constitution that says that we can't regulate our own water qualities and so forth. But how is it that we've let these agencies come in? Yes, some people have made some bad disasters and contaminated a lot of people. And they were folks that needed to go after. But your average person, you know, knowing about water, and let's presume that people know that, you know, if you go to the bathroom and somebody's water upstream, the down person's, you know, the downstream person is gonna drink it. So you got to know about that kind of stuff. But it does not permit. The Constitution does not permit the government of the United States to control any of this land, in our lands or the state lands or so forth. So how is Agenda 21 getting in here? So, okay. So the federal government is also prohibited from doing certain things that relate to your land and natural resources. One is illegal search and seizure. And that would include mineral and water investigations. Seizing property without just compensation. No private property can be taken for public purposes. And another provision of Amendment 4 is the privacy. So there are a lot of things that say the government can't. Now let's take a look at this. Why is this important? I'm going to start with some big projects. Missouri River Basin, 2011. The whole Missouri River project, 6 dams, 7 states, about 27 Indian tribes affected. Headwaters of everything dumps into the Mississippi River. Huge floods in the 30s. Construction of these dams in the 40s and the 50s. And ostensibly, you know, they were to do multiple purposes, but the first one is flood control. And it's the usual Army Corps of activities, dikes and levees and dams and so forth and so on. Well, in 2011, the Army Corps of Engineers failed to evacuate the dams in time for spring runoff, which came in May and June and caused a huge flooding over the entire summer of the Missouri River Basin. It was a disaster for agriculture, for everything. The environmentalists cheered, thought it was pretty good. because of the redistribution of sandbars, which would enable the endangered species to possibly recover. Although, how do you recover generally from that amount of, you just shift the habitat, if you will, from that amount of water moving, that amount of sediment. But the reasons for the Army, with the most sophisticated water management prediction center in the world, and tools in the world, and coupled with other federal agencies, should have known that there was cloud seeding going on in the headwaters for 2 years prior to that, that there had been record inflows, but they were trying to sell water, use an old authority that was given to them in the 1944 Flood Control Act to sell water. And so they held it, trying to sell it and trying to get people to buy it, and everybody hit the roof because nobody felt it was the Corps' water. These were all public facilities that had been built with public money and so forth and so on. Well, then all this water came down, and there was too much water in the reservoir, so it flooded. And now I get almost daily emails about how the Corps is now predicting this and now predicting that, and, you know, getting their reservoirs down to the right level. Now, that is outrageous. It has always been said of the Corps that they are owned by the barging interests in the Mississippi, and that all the water that's developed in North Dakota and South Dakota is bound for Missouri to support the floating of a few barges downstream and also the Mississippi River. So there are disparities between the management of water in the upstream reservoirs up in the Rockies, Montana, Wyoming, Colorado, parts of Colorado, and you know, the high plains and so forth and so on, Canada. They just basically took the water generated there. All of these states generated water through seeding, cloud seeding and so forth, and decided to, like I say, specifically try to hold it for sale to generate revenue for the federal government. Anyway, where I was going with this, my apologies, I just saw the scene of the flooding before my eyes, and I used to live up there, so I know what would have happened to me had I remained in North Dakota. The travesty of this, the, you know, original purpose of this under the welfare, public welfare, and to respond to a national emergency. Remember, it was coming off of FDR, who loved the big public works programs to develop employment. Those were good jobs. They did develop employment. They did provide a lot of service and development for people up and down the Missouri River system. But something has happened with the management of these things that they go against what they were designed to do. They were designed to protect against floods, not enhance them through their management. And nobody in the Corps got canned. I was surprised. A couple of other people I know got canned at different levels, but not the Corps. And I'm bound to determine to write this up somehow. But there we have, in the original authorizing language of the 1944 Flood Control Act, you will find to protect the health and welfare of the citizens. You will find to regulate commerce among the states, not within the states. And you will find that there were also treaty promises to fulfill the treaty obligations of the United States towards the tribes. Instead, every one of those reservoirs is built on a reservation, if you hadn't known that, wiping out thousands of years of cultural history, lying at the bottom of the Missouri River. And those promises have still not come through and so forth. But every year there's a management operations plan. Every year the barging interests win out. I'm getting to how Agenda 21 is coming in here now as a basin-wide groups and so forth that are doing this. And the stakeholder groups are trying to come up with a basin-wide management plan, and Obama's people, the generals in the Corps, are trying to set up a state's regional council and so forth. It is one of the regions of the 10 regions of the United States established by Obama's Governor's Council. And so the regionalization of management, the shift in from management and public welfare or benefit to overall control of the Corps over the residents of the Missouri River through electricity, water, you know, emergency services, everything like that. It's a shift, which is quite unconstitutional, if you will, and I would argue maybe unconstitutional from the beginning, to have built this the way it is and not plan to move this better towards the states. Oh, hi, Patriot Greg. We are talking tonight about the Constitution and resource management. It's kind of a boring show. If you want to catch the show later, you're more than welcome to. So let me see now. Okay. So the Missouri River and its natural resource management issues, the only thing that it built on was to protect the welfare of the population. There was nothing else constitutional about it. In terms of its relationship with the states, it has moved from one of a respect, this project just spanning a number of states, to one of control, essentially, of state infrastructure and so forth. So we accepted the benefits, but we forgot to take care of the responsibility on the other side. So what we have now is Agenda 21 moving in, the regionalization, the whole term of watershed management makes sense, but how can you manage and govern a watershed that spans 7 states, 27 different tribal cultures, and at least 4 different geographies and hydrologies and so forth, landforms, topography? But this is the goal, and this is how it is snuck in. Those projects in the 40s are very important to look at as we look at the breakdown in constitutional resource management in addition to constitutional governance. So what might it mean for the Missouri? It might mean each one of these states negotiating with and the federal government returning back authority over these facilities to the states themselves, and having no more of a role than, you know, operating the valves at the directions of the states and their representatives. I think that would be a sea change, but the alternative is the Corps can flood you out any time. And I think the floods were intentional. That's what I'm telling you in 2011. I think a lot of other people felt that as well. You combine HARP, it becomes an issue. So, anyway, okay. Another issue with regard to natural resource management, who gives the authority for anybody to spray the air with chemtrails? There is no authority to do so. Where is that in the Constitution? There's nowhere. Has any state decided to do that? No. Can the federal government decide to do that? No. At every single level of every single state, we have to stop the spraying of the atmosphere. It is unconscionable. It's killing us. It affects our bones and our blood and our immune systems and everything else. So it is important that we begin to work on that. Okay, I'm going to take just a short break, and then I'll be back with a few closing words on this Independence Day holiday. And then I will close this down for the evening. Here we go, I'll be right back.
colors of blue. Shoots up to the stony ground. There's no room, no space to rent in this town. You're out of luck, and the reason that you had to care, the traffic is stuck, and you're not moving anywhere. You thought you found a friend to take you out of this place. Someone